Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about things that worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've learned from. I share practical strategies and big ideas. And I talk to experts, people who really know their stuff. Because ultimately, I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so today, I'm talking to one of those experts. I interview Sam Marsden, and I've had her on this podcast once before. A little bit about her. Her goal is to empower and spark people's creativity, whether through her drama teaching, teaching resources, or fiction. Her first novel, Under Glass, went viral on Wattpad. Shortly after, it was optioned for film and TV by former Warner Brothers president of film, Greg Silverman. Sam went to the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama and then went on to study to get a BA/BS degree in International Development Studies and Sociology, where she was awarded a first class honors degree and the David Weeks Memorial Prize. She's taught drama full-time for over a decade in many different settings, and she now does that alongside her writing. And she's written a lot of great books. Check out all of her books related to this idea of the power of improv. And today she's gonna be talking specifically about how improv can help with social and emotional learning. So without further ado, here's my interview with Sam Marsden. All right, we have with us here Sam Marsden, and she was on the podcast, what was it, probably a year ago, 2 years ago maybe, and I really enjoyed your insights on, you know, the power of drama games, improv, what that does for students, and so we're having you back again, and I'm really excited about it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
So let's talk first about what we mean by drama games. So if people are not familiar, like, let's just set the tone a little bit. What are drama games?
Yeah, drama games. I think in America, sometimes you like to call them theater games.
Yeah, right? A little bit of both, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very active way of learning. You don't have to be a theater teacher or an actor to be able to teach them. They're excellent for every teacher ever. You can use them for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or for an hour as a brain break. And they're a way to get students up on their feet and connecting and playing and following their intuition. Yeah. And there are, I mean, there's probably 1,000 theatre games out there that you can play, some better than others.
What do you think makes a drama game a quality? So you mentioned some better than others. Like, when you think about what makes them good or what makes them a quality game, what do you think are the components or factors?
It has to be something that all the students can understand, a simple one. Mm-hmm. So when they're overcomplicated and students feel put on the spot, that's not a great drama game. But one that's easy to follow, one that everybody feels confident to participate in, mm-hmm. and one that encourages students just to go for it and to do it without any inhibitions. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned, you know, at the start of your book, this idea, and your latest book, which is kind of what we're going to dive into, is Drama Games for Mindfulness and Emotional Health. And, you know, I was struck at the very beginning, you talk about creating a safe space for drama games. But then there's also this sort of reciprocal relationship where, you know, you got to create a safe space to make it work, but then doing drama games themselves creates an environment for a class, a culture, climate, whatever you want to call it, that leads to psychological safety too, right? There's this sort of ongoing cycle. And so if we think about getting into drama games, what do you think needs to be done ahead of time to provide that sense of safety for students?
Yeah, it's really important for the facilitator to explain the boundaries first. I'd never just dive in with a class that I didn't know without explaining some of the fundamentals.
Yeah.
And the fundamentals for drama games, there's a few rules that you have to follow. We never imitate anyone in the class. So when you get up and you do an improvisation, one of the rules, we never use somebody in the class to imitate in an improvisation.
Uh-huh.
Also, anything, you know, nasty or eye rolling or anything like that is just not tolerated. And then really work on positivity in the group. And we say all ideas are accepted. There's nothing too silly. Mistakes are welcome. I mean, one of the fantastic things about drama is one of the fundamentals is that we make mistakes and we go with it. And we don't, if we make a mistake, we just try again and we do something else and we follow our intuition. There's no idea too silly. And also for creating a safe space, it's just about, you know, really listening to one another and really putting ourselves in the shoes of other people.
So I you know, you've written about what this looks like for different age groups and grade levels. And I'm curious if you could speak into, we'll get into the mindfulness and emotional health in just a second, but, you know, what does it look like at different grade level bands? So if you imagine early elementary, upper elementary, sort of middle grades up to high school, how will this vary in those contexts?
Yeah. So in this book, I've done it just for 8-year-old plus, because the activities are a bit harder. I mean, depending on your group, you might get away with some of the activities for kind of 6-7-year-olds. But for the younger age group, I mean, the thing is with mindfulness is I've said 8 up for so many activities because they really are possible for an 8-year-old or a 70-year-old or a 17-year-old. There's no kind of age limit, but the group will dictate kind of where it goes. So if you were facilitating this, an exercise with a group of 8-year-olds, it would probably stay quite simple and it would stay like that. But if you're facilitating it with 17-year-olds, the game would probably take a slightly different direction and you'd start going with more complicated things because the group would lead that.
Yeah. What do you do about, so, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned this before the podcast. I use several of your games for something called mock trial. And so if listeners aren't familiar, mock trial is basically students play the role of lawyers, witnesses, everything, and then they compete in a real live courtroom and they essentially run a trial. It's usually a civil trial. And then they're judged by jury members. And my job was to be a performance coach. And so my background as a speaker, like that's why I was doing this. But one of the things that we realized is you could try to teach people how to perform. You can give them advice on it. You can help them with blocking and voice and projection, tone, all of those things, body language. But there's something deeper that needs to happen, which is getting them to take creative risks, getting them to be comfortable in front of people, getting them to learn to read someone else and respond to them in a way that's not pre-planned. And so they memorize these lines and everything, but then they have to learn how to think on their feet and they have to learn how to stay in character. And these are huge, I would say, drama or theater things that they're doing in a very different context. And so what we found was doing drama games was really, really helpful to help them learn how to perform. And initially, you know, giving up 15 to 20 minutes to run one of these games in a 2-hour block to a lot of people seemed like a waste of time, to the kids in particular, or it seemed like, you know, what are the benefits of it? But then the benefits sort of came later, right? And so I share that story because when you think about the notion of using drama games in the classroom, how do you respond to the teacher or the students in this case, feeling like, well, this is fun, but we have work to do, right? we have to get stuff done. Like, how do you respond to that sort of issue that runs, especially in the secondary side of teaching?
Well, I'm really passionate about internal development over external development. And I think there's so much emphasis on, look at this product, look at what we've achieved, look at what we've done. But it's kind of superficial in a way. And if we can really focus on the internal of the students and on helping them build a stronger self within, then that's actually going to have ripple effects in all their subjects and lifelong. And in this book, my main focus has been to help people strengthen the internal self. And I've looked at things like asking them to think about their values and using their values to strengthen who they are. And that's going to help with confidence. So in your situation, if a student goes, yeah, do you know what? One of my values is fairness. And if they use that and if they hold on to that, and then they go in with that in mind, unconsciously, they're going to have better confidence and go for it. So it's difficult to quantify sometimes. You know, you're playing these games, you think, oh, it's just fun, or oh, it's just a waste of time. But practicing, speaking in front of a group, following your intuition and going for it is going to have ripple effects all over the place. And just being playful. I mean, we all know the business stories, you know, fail, and then succeed. You know, every CEO of a company or every successful person ever, that's their story.
Yeah.
But we don't really always teach that in schools. Right. We don't teach to our students, oh, do you know what, fail, succeed. And you just need to play. So just teach students to play, teaching students to connect with one another is rebuilding their soul in a way.
So when you think about this idea of that internal aspect and the focus of this particular book being, you know, mindfulness, emotional health, what do you see is the connection between the drama games themselves and that mindfulness piece or that emotional health? Like, can you describe a little bit what that connection looks like?
Yeah. So there aren't many people I don't know of anyone who's written about the connection.
Yeah.
But I really, really see one. So, I mean, in my private life, I practice mindfulness. I have done for about 10 to 12 years. And it was just separate from my drama teaching life. It was kind of a hobby that I have. And it just helps me regulate. And I sometimes go on mindfulness meditation retreats. And there's a place called Plum Village in France, which I adore, which was set up by Thich Nhat Hanh, a Zen master. Vietnam, and there's a group of about 400 or 500 brothers and sisters, mostly from Vietnam, who live there. And there's this wonderful film, actually, Walk With Me, narrated by Benedict Cumberbatch, which I highly recommend, about this center. And I've been going for about 10 years, and I volunteer as a English teacher to help teach some of the sisters English. Wow. And these people had such a profound effect on me. They really lived in the moment, and their joy and their happiness, but also their ability to accept all parts of themselves. It rubbed off on me anyway, and then it started kind of coming out in my teaching. And then when I was teaching drama, and then I started developing kind of drama activities with some mindfulness, and then I started combining them, and it really, really worked. Now, you know, mindfulness is a buzzword, and I love mindfulness. But to be completely honest, if you go into a class and you ask them all to meditate, they're going to get bored quite quickly.
Oh, yeah, completely.
And we all want to be like, yeah, we're going to teach our children mindfulness, and it's going to change the world, and it's going to be amazing, and this is going to solve all our problems. But the reality is, I think it needs to be taught in a bit more of an active way, a bit more of an engaging way, especially for younger students, for children in particular. And I got really excited about teaching some of the principles of mindfulness in an active, engaging way through drama. And I didn't know if it would work, but it did. And I saw it working with my students.
Oh, wow.
And it's yeah, I highly recommend combining the two.
So walk me through what one of these activities would look like. If a teacher is saying, okay, I'm interested in mindfulness, I believe in it, I've seen that it works, right? But yeah, my kids are squirrely. They want to move around a lot. It's a bit too much. This sounds intriguing. What does one of the activities look like?
A really simple one, just to introduce students to mindfulness. Mindfulness is just being fully present with the thing you are doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be sitting in the lotus position, meditating, breathing in and out. Actually, mindfulness can be practiced throughout your day. When you're driving your car, you can think, I'm driving my car, this is what I'm doing, or I'm listening to music. And you're fully listening to music rather than just trying to do three things at once. Or you're washing the dishes and you're with the dishes and you're feeling the soap on your hands and you're feeling the warmth of the water, your feet on the ground, your breath, and you're fully washing the dishes. Mm-hmm. So I have one activity which is called Mindfully Unmindfully. And you just say to the class, okay, everybody up on your feet, find a space mm-hmm. in the room. And you give a quick description of what mindfulness is, like I just did with you. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, unmindfully, we're going to eat an apple. And then everyone will kind of eat an apple unmindfully. Some people might kind of do a little dance, or they might kind of look around, or they'll be eating their apple. And then I'll say, okay, and now let's eat an apple mindfully. Really imagine biting into that apple. Really imagine the taste, imagine the texture, imagine the weight of the apple in your hand, imagine mm-hmm. where you are, and just be with that apple. Mm. And if your thoughts start wandering off, you know, to the next thing, you know, what lesson do I have next, or what am I going to watch on telly tonight, or is my friend mad at me, or any of these things, just bring yourself back to you and that apple in that moment. And then I might say, okay, right, next one. Let's unmindfully walk to school. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, okay, and now let's mindfully walk to school. So they're just physically doing these things. And then I will ask the class for suggestions as well of things that they might want to do.
Yeah. When do you imagine teachers might integrate these into their classroom practice?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great thing to start the day with. There are more traditional mindfulness exercises in there, kind of visualization activities and breathing activities and mantra activities, where you could just spend 5 minutes at the start of the day or after, you know, lunch. We call it lunch break. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, we do too. We call it lunch break.
After lunch break is a good one. Or if your class are just starting to look tired, I mean, if you're an hour into an activity and you can see everybody's eyes are starting to droop or something, can just quickly go, right, okay, and then just spend 5 minutes just changing the mindset with one of these activities.
Yeah. You know, when we think about the benefits of it, obviously you've kind of connected already the notion of mindfulness and emotional health. But what are some of those benefits long term that you see to students? Like, if this became a school-wide practice happening for years, what do you think? And I'm not talking about academic achievement, you know, like I'm saying for them as people, what do you think the long-term benefits would be to students that experience this?
So it's not all mindfulness activities in there. There are some that are more based on emotional health.
Mm-hmm. And
I studied the DBT workbook mm-hmm. By Marsha Linhan. And they gave me permission actually to adapt some of their things from the book. It's often used in group therapy with adults.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things in there like the give skills and things like catastrophizing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we can sometimes all have a bit of a tendency to catastrophize.
Uh-huh.
And one of the drama activities in this, it's an improv activity. So people go off in pairs, for example, and one of them's going to catastrophize and the other one's going to kind of try and calm them down a bit.
Okay.
So an example of catastrophizing, I might say, okay, your friend didn't text you back and you're going to catastrophize about this. And the other one's going to try and calm you down. So I'm like, my friend didn't text me back. Oh my goodness, are they mad at me? Is it because of this? Is it because of that? Oh my goodness, they hate me. Everyone hates me. I've got no friends. And the other one's going to calm them. Or it could be a situation with two characters, maybe two astronauts, you know, on the moon, or maybe two chefs in a restaurant. Oh my goodness, we don't have any carrots. Like, and they're going to catastrophize. Now, the students will watch these and they laugh, right? They find it hilarious. They find catastrophizing hilarious. Mm-hmm. But they realize that they might see their parents do it. They might see their teachers do it, and they might realize they do it. And 5 years down the line, or 10 years down the line, maybe when they're starting to catastrophize in their mind and they're starting to get anxious and so on, they might be able to label that as catastrophizing. And say, oh, hang on a minute, I remember that drama teacher or who mentioned catastrophizing. Am I doing that now? Oh, I am. Okay, maybe I need to rein that in a bit. There's also another one in there, thought, not fact.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah. Yeah.
Like, sometimes we have a thought and we think it's a fact, and then we can get very, very anxious. But maybe there's no evidence, actually, that that thought was a fact at all. And I think just planting these seeds now through drama games means later in adult life, when some, you know, things might start popping up, like it does for most, especially as teenagers. I mean, these kind of, often children don't tend to have them yet. So actually it's the perfect time to plant these seeds and these tools, because they haven't got the fences up yet. They haven't got the problem yet. So we can plant them now when they're younger, and then later when they start popping up, they might have some tools to regulate some emotions, or they might have some tools to be able to label things. I mean, naming feelings is a huge one. A lot of therapists and a lot of work says how important it is that we can name our feelings. And when we can name our feelings, that really, really helps us. I mean, drama is the perfect place to be naming feelings.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting, as we think about, you know, when I talk to teachers about the challenges in the classroom right now, they're not academic, right? It's kids are distracted. Kids are anxious. You know, students are struggling with self-regulation. They're struggling with getting tasks done and being resilient. They're having a hard time communicating with others. They're not finishing their work. I mean, these are the issues. None of those are academic, right? And everyone makes a huge deal in America about declining test scores, or, you know, there's this whole big, like, it's all about, we need to be teaching reading better, reading, better phonics, better this. And there's this other reality where I step into classrooms and I'm struck by the fact that the challenges that we're seeing, and I don't blame the kids for this, like, this is contextual, you know, this is our society is all experiencing this, you know, like, someone said, you know, kids these days seem so much more anxious. And I said, you know what, adults these days seem so much more anxious right now. Like, we're living in kind of anxious times, right? And I say that because, you know, one of the things I'm struck by is we either in schools ignore it, which is a danger, and say, we're just going to go just academics. We just need academics. Or we do these SEL lessons where we teach kids about blank. But what I'm struck by with this is active. It's not just saying, I'm going to teach you about catastrophizing. It's a memorable way because it's hands-on, it's practicing, it's playful, it's a game, and it becomes memorable, right? It becomes habitual. And to me, I think that's one of the real values I see with these drama games, is whether it's more focused on mindfulness or more focused on other areas of emotional health, it really is social and emotional learning that's not done in this read aloud and fill out a worksheet kind of way that I see a lot of. You know what I mean?
I mean, when they do it,
have
a laugh with it, they remember it. They really, really remember it. You know, one of the activities is add fire or water. And it's an improvisation. I can't quite exactly remember it, but I think it might be park bench, you know, where you have two strangers on a park bench and one of them's annoying the other. And you can inflame this situation. And I say, okay, right, you're going to be fire, inflame this, like make the conflict, make it worse. And then say to them, let's add water and see what that looks like. And then you teach the skills about putting the water on. And then they're like, oh, there are different ways to approach things. One of the things I find so powerful about drama is, you know, if students are seeing their parents model behavior at home, and if that behavior isn't necessarily desirable, we need to show them other ways of being. And they need to also experiment with other ways of being, and they need to know what that feels like. And with drama, we can say, hey, try being another person, try being like this, try that, see how it feels. And they get to discover a new way of being that perhaps might not have been available to them otherwise. And that's so liberating for a student that comes from a difficult home.
So if people are interested in learning more about it, what are some ways that they could connect with you or find you online?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Pocketful of Drama. I'm on LinkedIn, Sam Marsden. And my book is on Amazon, Drama Games for Mindfulness and Emotional Health.
And I will say, because people can't see it since it's a podcast, but one of the things that I will say about this book and all of your books are they are so practical and so clear. They're concise. They're just so usable. They're so practical.
My aim was that anybody, and I mean anyone, even not a teacher, could pick it up and within 5 minutes facilitate it.
I love it.
I have heard that apparently some teachers hand the book to one of the students in the class for teenagers. Teach for the next hour. Just reads out the book. I'm not advocating this, but I've heard it happen.
Well, it is fascinating because, you know, it makes me think there's a lot of potential, you know, uses for this where, you know, this could be connected to an after school program. This could be, you know, morning circle time in a grade three class. It could be, there's a lot of ways that teachers can implement this because what you have created is so universal and so just easy to pick up and follow it, you know, and then modify it based on what you've learned about your students, right? Like, oh, we're going to change things up too. And that becomes a lot of fun. So thank you so much for being on this podcast and sharing your insights.
Thank you so much for having me and for sharing your insights too. Really interesting.
Thanks. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcast? That would mean the world to me. And maybe tell a friend about it. The other thing that you can do is subscribe. That always makes a huge difference. And if you do not subscribe to my newsletter, check it out. Go to spencereducation.com. You'll see a tab at the top or on a mobile device. It'll be on the side. And the newsletter tab will be there. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.